Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Katie Britton. In Scott Speer's enthralling immortal city, the world has changed. Angels have come out, and now it's their turn to have a piece of the American dream. No longer are the Hollywood Hills and Walk of Fame filled with movie stars. Instead, their names of the greatest angels and the best shows are the real-life saves that are streamed real-time. Angels are the rock stars of the world, and no one can forget that it's pay to save.
It was an idea that had always been kicking around in my mind, and I wanted the opportunity to kind of tell the story that I feel like I lived coming to Los Angeles and getting into the entertainment business, but giving it sort of a supernatural twist.
I love all the characters in the sense of how the majority of them, they are just so enthralled with the angels, and they are pay for hire. They are no longer just your guardian angel that you think of overlooking and to help you along, but you have to pay them a ridiculous amount of money in order to be saved.
Yeah, I mean, that was something that I really wanted to experiment with, was just being in this industry, really just living in Los Angeles. I just thought, okay, if there were really guardian angels, you know, would they sort of be in white robes? And, you know, how would that really work in our modern day and age? Would they just save people because that's the right thing to do? And I thought, of course they wouldn't. I mean, this is America. You know, it's like everyone, you know, they would want to get paid. They would want a piece of the American dream like everyone else. So it was sort of a really fun experiment for me to try and reinvent the idea of guardian angels with sort of, you know, a mercenary sort of twist.
And that brings us to Jackson Godspeed, who is the golden boy of the angels, and he is about to be commissioned, which means he will be appointed somebody to guard and become their protector. To you, when you think about him as your character, do you think of him as Jackson or as Jax?
You know, I think of him as Jax, I guess, but really the idea behind having the nickname and sort of two sides to him is he's really based off of a lot of actors who I've gotten to know who have to live this double life and are sort of one person to the public and someone else in private. And I'm not even saying that those aren't two entirely different people. It's just that, you know, I think it's more difficult than a lot of people realize to be in the public eye and to have to balance that side of you that's always camera ready, that's always has the right thing to say, there's always a smile, you know, with the other side of you that's a lot more human and like everyone else. You have good days, you have bad days. And so there's just friends of mine in the business who I've watched with a lot of admiration who have been able to do that, and sort of they find themselves in such a strange position in life that I really felt like that was a really exciting and kind of intriguing character and a lot more multi-layered than I think a character like that is often, you know, portrayed as or given. I really wanted to try and look at a celebrity from a human perspective, which is funny because obviously he's an angel, but try and humanize him and kind of go, okay, you know, he's the Brad Pitt of the world, but, you know, he also has all these pressures, and in a lot of ways his life is exactly like Maddie, who, you know, really comes from a very working class background, they both kind of face similar pressures in their life. And so that kind of mirror image of my two characters was very interesting to me.
And Matt is quick to point out to Jax that you have everything on a plate handed to you. And there's a point where he says, well, my family needs to eat too. And she says, well, your family eats too much.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you know, I had a lot of fun just sort of trying to talk out that whole issue. You know, because L.A. is a very segregated city, I really believe. Having come here from San Diego, which was very middle class, and I came from a Navy family, and we all lived on the same block and in similar houses, and that was a very different upbringing, a very different experience from when I moved to L.A., and I feel like the city is really full of haves and have-nots. And you know, like, for example, I think that New York, in an interesting way, everyone's, you know, mixed in together. And you can't really, I feel like you can't really be a New Yorker and hold yourself apart from that. You know, everyone walks. You walk on the same streets that everyone else does. There's a collective, you know, sensibility. And yet in L.A., strangely enough, people really keep to themselves, and groups of people, keep to themselves. And so I kind of was really drawn to that idea of haves and have-nots, and how, you know, there's people in this city that make millions and millions of dollars, you know, right next to, you know, families that barely make anything. But, you know, if you were to talk to those people, you know, who are making so much, they would kind of have the same argument. And you can't really, you know, on some level, you can't fault them for being ambitious and successful and want, you know, and wanting to provide for their families too, you know, but you have to sort of acknowledge. I thought there was something very interesting in acknowledging how it's simultaneous inequality and yet, you know, a strange way, it's almost justifiable in some strange way.
And Maddie, as you said, is on the absolute other end, and she lives with her uncle who owns Kevin's Diner. And it's where she meets Jax for the first time. But unlike the rest of the world, she's not enthralled with the angels and what's happening in their lives and doesn't know who's who.
Right, exactly. That was the same, you know, again, going back to L.A. and, you know, what a lot of this movie, or sorry, this book is, funny trying to make movies and books at the same time. What this book is based off of is there's sort of this whole group of people in L.A. who I always find really interesting because they want nothing to do with the entertainment industry. You know, they're not in any way connected to it, which is sort of strange here because that's sort of our, you know, that's our industry here, if you will. Everyone's in the business. And then you'll run into these people who have absolutely no interest. And I found that a fascinating character that was worth, you know, worth returning to and worth seeing the world through her eyes. Because I've always kind of wondered how those people feel about, you know, celebrities and everyone else. And I also feel like that, you know, that magic of Maddie kind of always judging people for who they are, people and angels alike, always just sort of almost not being hardwired in the way that a lot of people who buy into celebrity culture, I feel like, are hardwired to just sort of idolize these people and you know, aspirational, and they wish they had, you know, what celebrities have. And then there's the other people who are just, you know, their DNA is different. And that's Maddie. And I thought that was absolutely the most interesting character in this world, you know, once I had created this world.
And as you're creating this world, it's really, you've transposed it into this angel world where the Walk of the Stars are actually the angels' names, and you have ANN, the Angel News Network, and how all of the gawkers and the fans who flock to Hollywood to have their star sightings, they're looking for the angels with t-shirts that say, "Save me."
Now, I have to ask you, since you just read the book, when you read all of that, did you feel like that world was, you know, at the same time foreign to you but very familiar?
I felt it was very familiar. I mean, I have to say I have not been to Beverly Hills or that area ever, but have only seen it, whatever you see in TV, in the movies, and I could see it very, very well in my mind.
Right. Okay, great. That was the goal. And the goal with kind of all of my storytelling that I'm really drawn to is I was raised on Steven Spielberg, and I'm a huge fan of Stephen King, and I love storytelling that takes what we know and builds onto it, you know, and kind of uses imagination to what if while keeping a foot in our world, you know, which I think is sort of when you reach this sort of, you know, level of storytelling that's quite magical, and that was the idea behind that, was to take the audience into a world that they know, you know, and they know the parameters of this world, they know the conventions, they know the rules of this world, and yet, you know, it's not their world, and yet it doesn't feel like the world that they know. So hopefully there's a lot of fun to be had with that in the book.
There is. And do you, as you wrote this book, and as somebody who works on movies, do you see it play out like a movie in your mind as you are writing it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that was a big idea while I was writing, was because I'd love to shoot the movie one day. But even whether or not, you know, ultimately, you know, that comes to pass, I like to write in a very visual way. So I think every author has a different process. But because I'm a director as well, it's the same process as when I direct. It's all about visualizing the story first. So I just see the story in my head and then begin to describe what I'm seeing. And so I'm hoping that that gives the book a visual sort of aspect to it that's really fun and, you know, paints a vivid portrait as you go through.
It does. Even the smells. When you write about the different smells that are occurring, I can smell them in my head, like the smells of the food at the diner or of the drunk who can smell the evil demon, you know, and he knows there's something evil and dark there.
Right. Okay, good. Yeah. Smells are, they're crazy, right? I love reading books where there are smells. I don't know what it is about, about smells, but I feel like it just puts you in a time and a place. And, you know, you'll smell, like, I'll go home and, you know, smell my mom's cooking, and it'll just take you back.
It makes you more connected.
I love smells. I always try and include them.
There is a dark tone to the novel. And what is happening is some of the angels are being murdered and being made mortal and during this process. So when you were thinking of a bad guy, did you know you wanted to go into the direction as, I mean, angels, whether or not they exist, and going to kind of like that supernatural level of bringing in a possibility that you have that dark side juxtaposed with the angels?
Yes. Yeah, that was always something I wanted to explore, was the idea that people, or that, you know, I've seen in this business a strange phenomenon, or it's just something that I'm interested in. And what I love about the book too, or, you know, what I really tried to do is, I think like everyone, you know, I'm still learning, and I'm still learning about this business and going through my life, and you learn every day. And so, you know, the book doesn't attempt to make any kind of thesis on celebrity culture or anything like that, so much as it's just kind of, here's my impressions up to thus far in my life. As we move through the second and third book, I hope to keep evolving it. But one thing that really did stick out to me, especially in my music video career, was that people who were fans of artists that I was working for, they had this simultaneous need to love their heroes and consume them, which I found was sort of a dark side to all of this. And they wanted to put their heroes on a pedestal and then tear them down. And it was sort of both ideas were equally important to the fans, because I would see, you know, someone up on stage and performing, and I would see, you know, thousands and thousands of people cheering for them. And then I would see someone throw a water bottle at them as hard as they could, you know, because there's this simultaneous need, you know, with the intention to hurt them, you know, and there's this sort of strange simultaneous need to sort of consume that which you put up on a pedestal. So anyway, that was really where a lot of that came from, was I wanted to explore both those sides. So I wanted to explore the idea of heroes in the world that people love, and yet this darker side of this need to sort of tear down these heroes. And how does that push-pull kind of work? You know, that's where a lot of that came from.
And there's one more character before we go, and that's Ethan. And it's one of those things where you have a love triangle going on. And what do you think it is with the reader's need to really have that push and pull of, will she or won't she go for the angel or the human?
Well, I think that just comes down to the choices we all make in life. And certainly a love triangle is conventional in this genre. You know, I think in my book, I've done some things with it that I think make it interesting and unique. But at the same time, whenever you're telling a romance, I think it always comes down to a choice. You know, I think a lot of great storytelling comes down to a choice. And so that being what it is, I think there's always a need to present that choice. And to really, you know, specifically for Immortal City, I wanted to give Maddie exactly what the old Maddie would have wanted, which is a strange way of saying the fun of introducing someone like Jax and having Jax enter Maddie's world, who is someone who Maddie is actually not interested in, you know, or never would care about being in her world, unlike, you know, almost probably any other girl in Immortal City. The fun of that then, I felt like, was balancing that against another character who is a nice guy, who is always there for her, sort of the exactly the kind of guy you'd want to bring home to mom and dad. And so all of a sudden, you know, I think you really put Maddie to the test as a character, and you find out what she's made of, because the question is, you know, are you going to be sort of angel struck by this guardian angel? Or how about this other guy who seems like a great guy, who's got everything going for him, and, you know, is probably someone you see eye to eye with, probably someone you think you have more in common with? And I thought that that was a great way to push Maddie and flush her out and find out what she would really do.
The name of the book is Immortal City. Scott, thank you so much for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Again, the name of Scott Spear's novel is Immortal City. It is published by Razorville.